Tonight on Standing Room Only, Intimate Sycamore Landscapes.
Welcome to Standing Room Only, featuring lectures, town hall meetings, and other public forums recorded on location by WFHB community volunteers. This program amplifies voices not adequately represented in mainstream media to help raise public consciousness of issues affecting life in South Central Indiana and beyond.
On April 26th, Steve Higgs discussed his experience studying and reporting on natural conservation in Indiana. Higgs is among Indiana's foremost environmental photographers and is the author of Eternal Vigilance, Nine Tales of Environmental Heroism in Indiana, and a guide to the natural areas of southern Indiana. His talk was one in a series from Green Drinks Bloomington, a monthly event for people interested in discussing, debating, and exploring their way to a greener world.
Thanks for joining us here tonight on this gorgeous spring evening. It's good to have y'all here. I am excited and looking forward to this presentation this evening. Steve and I just realized we've known of each other for many, many years now, but tonight's the first time we met. So it's good to finally get to meet this person who I've read his writing for so many years, and it's so good. So before we bring Steve on, though, I just want to, of course, start out by thanking the Upland and Kelly in particular. Thank you, Kelly. So Steve Higgs is one of Indiana's senior environmental writers and photographers. He's the author of Eternal Vigilance, Nine Tales of Environmental Heroism in Indiana. And his experience includes 11 years as an environmental reporter at the Herald Times, 4 as a senior environmental writer and editor at the Indiana Department of Environmental Management, and he is currently an adjunct lecturer at the Indiana University Media School, where he teaches online journalism. On the side, he leads nature tours through his business, Natural Bloomington Eco Tours, and more, and also through the Sierra Club Hoosier chapter. Please welcome Steve Higgs.
Well, thank you, Marcia. I want to thank Marcia and Green Drinks Bloomington for inviting me here tonight, for all of you for showing up here. As I told Marcia, I believe I attended, if not the very first Green Drinks Bloomington meeting back when it was held at the Upland down at the bottom of the hill there, way, way, way back when. And I'm really appreciative of being here. She also did mention that she very graciously talks to my students at the university almost any time we ask. In fact, I think 2 or 3 of them may have interviewed her this time, so I appreciate that. But the reason I'm here tonight, I was invited here tonight, is to share with you what City Councilman Andy Ruff once referred to as my epic journey through the backcountry of southern Indiana, and actually Indiana in general. For the past 4 years, I've spent most of the time that I wasn't in the classroom and I wasn't grading student stories, exploring what's left of natural Indiana, mostly in the southern part of the state, but I've just recently started exploring the northern part of the state for a variety of projects. As she mentioned, I have naturalbloomington.com is the website through which I've done this for 4 years now. If you go to the naturalbloomington.com website, you'll find over 4,000 photographs that I've shot, 140 blogs documenting the places that I've been. In addition to that, a year ago, just about a year ago today, it was actually April 20th last year, IU Press published my second book, as she mentioned, A Guide to Natural Areas of Southern Indiana, where I document and photograph 119 different protected natural areas in southern Indiana between I-70 and the Ohio River. 119 might sound like a lot, and it is. I mean, I was a little surprised that I found this many properties. Each one is not only protected in some measure, and I'll talk about that more here in a second, but they're also open to the public for anybody to go and enjoy and explore the same way that I have. But as I say, well, there's 119 properties here. That's really precious little of what natural Indiana was when LaSalle and the early French explorers first set foot in Indiana in the late 1700s. They landed in Indiana up on Lake Michigan. Took many, many years for them to get down to here. But what's left is precious little that's out there. But what is out there is actually magnificent. I mean, I've been photographing southern Indiana. I came here in 1969, graduated in 73, had never left. I've been photographing the woods, except for the years when I was raising children and working full-time. I've been exploring the woods for more than 40 years here, photographing the woods, and I thought I knew southern Indiana. Well, until I started on this project, once I started on this, I realized I'd really seen hardly anything at all. These 119 sites out here, they are magnificent and they are precious, even though there's not a lot of them out there. Over the past 4 years, I have spent time photographing and traversing along our mighty rivers, swollen creeks, and intermittent creeks. I've explored the hills and the hollers, the flatlands and the wetlands, the canyons and the swamplands. Yes, we have swamps in Indiana. I'll talk more about that here in a few minutes. The swamplands of southern Indiana as well as northern Indiana. I move a lot. I'm a photographer, so I'm always on the move. I'm really not sitting in one place, so I don't see a lot of critters. Although over the 4 years and through my travels, I photographed everything from turtles to toads to deer to cranes to butterflies, bald eagles. I photographed quite a bit of wildlife as well. And like I say, what's out there is absolutely magnificent. And I'll get all that to you. I'm going to share this journey with you in a few minutes, but I'm going to share it with you in part with a focus on Sycamore Land Trust and on the Land Trust nonprofit conservation organizations like Sycamore that are responsible for saving a lot of what little is left of natural Indiana out there. At the end, I'm going to tell you about it here for a few minutes. Then at the end, I'm going to show, I have an 8-minute slideshow that I've put together from the journey that focuses on the 16 different Sycamore properties that are included in the book. I call it Intimate Sycamore Landscapes. And for those of you who don't know, I'm sure everybody in this room knows about Sycamore Land Trust. If you don't, you should. And if you want to know a lot more about it, Ann Connor, who's the development director at Sycamore, is here with us tonight. So any question that you may have that I might not be able to answer, I can guarantee you Ann will. Okay? So let me get started here. Let me talk a little bit about Sycamore. To transition to this, I'm going to steal the lead from my blog that I posted on Sunday, which was called Sycamore Land Trust, and Green Drinks Bloomington. In that, I describe myself as feeling a little bit like Sycamore's long-lost but still loving godfather. I wasn't in the room when Sycamore was conceived 27 years ago. And Scott Russell Sanders, Tom Zeller, David Porter, and a bunch of like-minded conservation folks from the Sassafras Audubon Society gathered around a table, talked about the need to save what's left of natural Indiana, and realized that the Sassafras, which is much more of an activist organization in those days, wasn't really equipped to do it, and so they decided to create a land trust. Like I said, I wasn't there in the room when it happened, but I was the first person that they called. At that time, I was the environmental reporter at the Bloomington Herald-Times, and when Tom Zeller called me and told me about it, I wrote the article in February of 1991 announcing the formation of the Sycamore Land Trust and their mission and their purpose. I was the guy who told the world, these guys exist and here's what they're doing. 16 years later, in 2007, when I was publishing the Bloomington Alternative, and we just started the print edition at that time, I did, we'll sort of say that this was perhaps a Sycamore's adolescence. I did a major front page piece about Sycamore and what they were doing. It featured Christian Freitag. We toured a lot of the areas, put it on the front page, and at that time, Sycamore was protecting about 4,000 acres. A decade after that, I have, we could probably say they're into their early adulthood here. They've been around for 27 years now. I included 16 of their properties out of the 119 were Sycamore properties that I included in the guidebook here. So let me throw some numbers at you here to put into perspective what role that Sycamore and the Land Trust do in terms of protecting our natural heritage here. Indiana, the whole state of Indiana, has 36,000 square miles, or about 23 million acres, total land mass in the state of Indiana. Now, when the French explorers and the Europeans first arrived here, 87% of the state of Indiana was covered by forest. 87%, 20 million acres of the state was covered by forest. There's a little stretch of prairie. Many people don't know that the Great Plains, prairies, and grasslands actually started in western Indiana, along the Indiana border between Indiana and Illinois from Gary south to Terre Haute, was the beginning of the Great Plains. With the exception of that and the rivers and the lakes, all of the state of Indiana was covered by one massive canopy of hardwood forest. From Gary to Lawrenceburg, from Evansville to Fort Wayne, the entire state was basically covered with woods. 20 million acres was wooded. And of course, all of it was natural. All 23 million acres, by definition at that time, was natural. Now, my book, I have 119 sites in there, which total about 600,000 acres, a little more than 600,000 acres, that, again, are protected in some measure, okay? That's not a lot. That is not a lot at all. That's only 5% of the land mass of southern Indiana that is actually protected in some form or another. And when you consider that over a third of that, 40% of the Hoosier National Forest, and sadly and apparently, as I'm sure you're all aware, 100% of the Indiana State Forest System are subject to logging and other extractive uses. So even out of that 600,000 acres, well over 200,000 acres can still be logged. Now, there are many people, and probably some in this room, who would argue that management and logging and that sort of thing is, in fact, protecting the ecosystem, and I certainly don't disagree with them. But we all have different, I think, definitions of what protection is. So when it comes to land that is protected in perpetuity, forever, there's not a whole lot of it left. You've got the Deem Wilderness down here on the Hoosier National Forest that's protected forever. Most of the sites on my website are dedicated state nature preserves, which means that they also will never be exploited or cut or developed in any way. Okay, and you have what the land trust zone, and that's basically it. Today, of that natural Indiana, when we talk about these woods, in the state of Indiana, the largest tract of land in the state of Indiana that has never been cut is 190 acres, believe it or not, inside the Evansville city limits. There's a place down there called Wesselman's Woods. I've stood under the tallest tulip tree in the state of Indiana. It's not the biggest because there's another one that has a bigger crown, but it's the tallest tulip tree in the state of Indiana inside the city limits of the third largest city in the state. That these trees are still here is nothing more than the grace of God. That site actually sits right on the Wabash and Erie Canal. Had the Wabash, at the tail end of the Wabash and Erie Canal of the 19th century, had that canal not failed, those 190 acres worth of trees would have been gone. They're only here because of that failure, and nobody ever got around to cutting them. The second largest stand of uncut timber is 88 acres in the Hoosier National Forest just south of Paoli in a place called Pioneer Mothers Memorial Forest. That's another one. The family, the heirs, they had kept it pristine for generations, and it came a point in time in the early 20th century when the family heirs decided and actually sold these 88 acres of old growth, true old growth, to a Louisville Timber Company who had plans to cut down those 88 acres. A civic group down there called the Pioneer Mothers, along with the U.S. Forest Service, organized the community, raised the money, convinced the timber company to not cut the trees, and then bought the land back from them. That's why those 88 acres still exist. The third largest is Donaldson's Woods, which many of you have probably been to in Spring Mill State Park down here, just down south of us here about a half an hour or so, which is 60 acres. And again, only divine intervention saved those woods. I actually wrote the story about a story about George Donaldson, who owned the property, who was an eccentric Scotsman, who was imprisoned in Scotland in the 19th century, maybe for murder. Nobody knows for sure what it was, but he was in prison, and his wealthy father bought him out of prison and onto a boat to the New World. George Donaldson ended up owning four estates in North America, one of which being the acreage down in Spring Mill State Park, and he was a very eccentric guy. He was a big game hunter. but he wouldn't allow anybody to hunt on his property down there. He never allowed a tree to be cut down there. That's why those 60 acres still exist. And when he died, in the early 20th century, he died without a will. And under Indiana state law, because he didn't have a will, the property ended up going to the state, first to Indiana University. Indiana University in the early 20th century then transferred it to the new Indiana Department of Conservation, which became the Indiana Department of Natural Resources. And so those 60 acres of trees down there were never cut because George Donaldson didn't have a will. If he'd had a will, they would have been sold to somebody, and those 60 acres would be gone as well today. Okay? So enter Sycamore Land Trust and the Land Trust. What they do, according to what you'd have to call the Nature Conservancy model, because the Nature Conservancy is the oldest and the biggest, is they protect land in perpetuity. Again, I love that phrase, in perpetuity. It's very lyrical, as well as it means forever, right? Nothing can happen to these places forever. They are allegedly forever protected, although we thought that about the state forests, at least the backcountry areas. And Mitch Daniels and Mike Pence have had no qualms whatsoever about logging in our backcountry areas, but that's a whole other discussion for a whole other time here. But they protect the land in one of two, maybe three ways. And they purchase the land outright, or they enter into agreements, conservation easements, and things like that with private landowners who want to protect the land but maintain ownership over it and have it protected. So Sycamore enters into deals with them where Sycamore manages the land again in perpetuity, but it still belongs to the folks there. Well, in southern Indiana, in the half of the state, we'll say 11,500 acres, or I'm sorry, square miles down there. The land trusts that are in my book, those five land trusts own about 90,000 acres. The Nature Conservancy is the biggest. They have 80,000 acres that they steward for us. Sycamore is second with 9,000 acres. Of course, they're all in southern Indiana. The Nature Conservancy is all over the state. The Central Indiana Land Trust, which I believe is out of Indianapolis or the Indianapolis area, they own and protect 1,000. The Oak Heritage Conservancy, which is another land trust based down in Hanover, down on the Ohio River, they have 700 acres, and then there's a tiny little 100-acre spot down by Lawrenceburg where Indiana meets Ohio and meets Kentucky called the Oxbow, which is an area, I won't go into it, but altogether, like I say, these organizations protect about 90,000 of the 600,000 acres that are listed in my book here. That's about 15% of what's in my book. In my book, I didn't get everything. I don't claim to have captured every single natural area in southern Indiana, but I got most of them, and I got all of the big ones, all of the really important ones here. So about one out of every 7 acres of those are managed and protected by land trusts and nonprofit organizations like Sycamore and these other folks. Okay, so they play a very, very important role. I'm in touch. I work quite a lot. Mike Hamoya, if anybody knows Michael Hamoya from the Department of Natural Resources with the Division of Nature Preserves, he's the state botanist and has been since the mid-1980s. I think he started in 85. He has the definitive definition of what are natural areas in southern Indiana. He's told me there's nothing more left to save. Okay, everything that is really worth having, we already have. So that just emphasizes and highlights. I mean, there are places where we can add on, and there are certainly places that are worth saving. But in terms of what's left of original Indiana, and there's not much of it that is actually original, it's just representations of what we had before, it's basically saved. So the role that Sycamore and the Nature Conservancy and all these groups, the role that they are playing is absolutely essential and worth supporting and everything else, because they are doing incredible work for us all here. So I want to talk a little bit, because this is all a part of a personal journey here that for me, well, I actually had a thing at Earth Day myself. It was hosted by Mike Leonard. Many of you probably know Mike from the HT and from Bloom Magazine. Mike was the host, and James Alexander Tom, who wrote the foreword to my book, the local author and icon and my lifelong hero. I've sort of followed Jim's footsteps in a lot of different ways. The three of us sat down at the venue on Earth Day and had a conversation about my book and about natural Indiana, sort of along the similar lines here. And Mike asked me, he said, Mike's from Greenfield. I grew up on the industrial east side of Indianapolis. He says, how does a guy who grew up on the east side of Indianapolis, which is quote unquote anything but scenic, How did he end up writing this book and committing his elder years, apparently, to exploring and preserving and helping raise awareness about natural southern Indiana? And I told him, it really has been a bit of a lifelong journey. I'm not going to give you the whole journey. If I did, I'd run out of time here. But it started when I was in elementary school. When I started a school, my mother went to work, and I spent the summers and after school at my aunt's house, who lived on East 18th Street, where what is now the Warren Central, part of the Warren Central High School campus. In those days, it was a cornfield, but there was an acre of woods across the street from my aunt's house where I spent my summers, and my cousins and the neighborhood kids, we spent all of our time climbing trees, playing army. This was the 60s, playing army in this acre of woods over there, and that's sort of where I became introduced to the environment, because where I grew up was a cornfield that turned into a house farm. There was a little bit of woods down by a creek, but there was nothing. It was culturally and scenically completely devoid of anything of value, without overstating the case too much here. To really just touch some of the highlights over the years, to get on them really quickly here. In 1978, I sold cameras. Anybody around remember Hazel's Camera Center right next door to Kirkwood there? I sold cameras there in 1978, 1979 up until 1980, and I made the acquaintance of a guy named Bill Thomas. Bill Thomas had been the 1976 National Geographic Nature Photographer of the Year. He and I became friends. He became a bit of a mentor to me and was the person who really kind of convinced me that my photography was something that I could possibly pursue. I had started shooting pictures in the 1970s. In 1975, I moved out to a little place out by the Scenic View Restaurant where my backyard was about 25 feet to a 3/4 mile woods down to Lake Monroe. I married an artist. I knew how to handle the camera. She taught me how to see. She taught me what art was. And I sort of began my adult life in 1975 there on the ridge top out on Knight Ridge Road there and got serious about photography. In 1981, our oldest daughter was born in 1980. We decided it was time for me to get real and stop, living this sort of student extended kind of life. And I went back to graduate school and I decided to go into photojournalism, hoping that I would be able to learn how to write as well as take pictures and maybe someday do the National Geographic thing, do books and that sort of thing. So I got my master's degrees there. And in the middle of that, I kind of got stuck here. My ex-wife was disabled in an accident while I was in school. I was sort of left with the choice of taking my children from their mother, leaving my children behind, neither of which was an acceptable option because I had a promising newspaper career ahead of me. So I stayed in Bloomington. I got hired at the HT, and from 1985 to 1996, I was the chief environmental reporter at the HT. As Mike Leonard put it the other night, and I would have to agree with him humbly, that I made the environmental beat mine. Okay, I mean, I took it over. Not many people would disagree. Charlotte Zitlow would be the first one to tell you that we would have a PCB incinerator on South Dillman Road if it wasn't for the coverage that I did against the incinerator at the HT. When I started there in 1985, the U.S. Forest Service proposed clear-cutting the entire damned Hoosier National Forest. All 188,000 acres of it, with the exception of a few places here and there, over a 120-year period, they were going to go in and cut down trees on plots of up to 30 acres apiece over a century, and that was their idea of land management. Claude Ferguson, who's a legendary, legendary figure, not only in southern Indiana environmental, but in U.S. Forest Service history, because Claude Ferguson was the Forest Service chief supervisor in Bedford, and he sued his employer, the U.S. Forest Service, when they proposed putting off-road vehicle trails in the Hoosier National Forest. He sued them. They fired him. He won the lawsuit, although he left, and ORV trails were never built there. Well, I took over. I actually wrote my final master's project in the journalism school. It was called Clear Cutting the Hoosier National Forest, Professional Forestry or Panacea. And in that, I interviewed Claude, and Claude said, clear cutting is not forestry. He says, you walk into the office, you draw circles on the map, and you're done. He said, it makes it easy to go for coffee, but it's not forestry. Well, over the years, and certainly, I mean, my reportage was certainly central to what happened there. Andy Mahler, Bob Clowitter, Jeff Stant, Jeff St. Clair, I'm sure you'll recognize some of these names. They were the guys that stopped it, but I think they would agree that without the reporting we did at the Herald Times, it probably wouldn't have been stopped. So when I left, so 1996, just before I left, is when I published my first book, Eternal Vigilance, Nine Tales of Environmental Heroism in Indiana, which was a series of profiles of Andy and Bob and Jeff Stant and Tom Dustin and all these great 20th century environmentalists here. I wrote that book in 96, and from 96 to 2000 then, I went to work for the Department of Environmental Management, where I was a senior writer and editor for the first 4 years of the Frank O'Bannon administration up there. Jump ahead here, in between 2002, I freelance wrote for the Bloomington Independent. I had a column there. I wrote some stories for them. But in 2005 to 2012, I published the Bloomington Alternative, which is an online alternative media voice. Then we had a street publication for 3 years, and then I went back to online, and I dropped it in 2012 for many reasons, in part because the politics were getting really, really ugly. Okay, I had a stalker who was stealing my newspapers, and I had to go to the police. And here I'm sitting between a police officer who's telling me that because this guy smokes pot, he's crazy. And I'm between these two things here trying to figure out what am I going to do. All I want is my newspapers to be out there. But I basically quit the alternative in 2012 and spent about a year. I was teaching and kind of in between things. And then in the spring semester in 2013, my very last midterm conference was with a Chinese student whose name, and I have to say this slowly, Jingyi Jane Zhang. Jingyi, I had studied Chinese culture as an undergraduate, and she was one of my first Chinese students. She was my last student, and we sat and talked probably for about an hour, just ended up kind of shooting the shit for an hour. And in the course of that, she mentioned to me that one of her favorite things as a child in China was going with her photographer grandfather to the mountains. Well, I'm a grandpa. My granddaughter is 13 years or 12 years old now. She goes with me, and that kind of got me to thinking. For a long time, I'd been thinking about doing environmental tours. And if anybody knows Nell Weatherwax and George Murphy, her ex-husband, but I once asked George, I said, George, do you think anybody would be willing to pay for an environmental tour of Bloomington where I would show them the PCB sites, all the toxic waste dumps, the Superfund sites, all the natural beauty? And George said to me, well, I think people would be willing to pay to see the beauty, but nobody's going to pay to go see a toxic waste dump, which of course made sense. So I just kind of chucked that away. Until I was talking to Jingyi that day. And at the end of the conversation, I said, well, I'll tell you what, you know, we're going to be done here with class in a month and a half. Once we're finished, you can get some of your friends together, and I will just take you guys out and drive you around and show you some of the natural beauty that you're probably not going to otherwise see. Then I got to thinking about this idea, about this old idea, and Natural Bloomington was kind of born.
You have been listening to Intimate Sycamore Landscapes on Standing Room Only on WFHB. You've been listening to Steve Higgs, one of Indiana's foremost environmental photographers and writers, discuss his experience studying and reporting on natural conservation in Indiana. His talk was one in a long series from Green Drinks Bloomington, a monthly event for people interested in discussing, debating, and exploring their way to a greener world. We now return to the show with environmental writer and photographer Steve Higgs speaking about Natural Bloomington, a local ecotourism resource.
I got to thinking about this idea, about this old idea, and Natural Bloomington was kind of born. The idea was to get into ecotourism, which is a particular branch of tourism, outdoor tourism, that involves not only taking people out and getting in touch with nature, but supporting conservation groups. So some of the projects I've done, I've donated money to the Sycamore Land Trust. I have a new project with my friend and partner, Gary Morrison, Indiana Nature Photography, where we lead nature photography workshops. We're going to do a wildflower one on the 13th where Sycamore has helped spread the word for us, and we're going to contribute 10% of what we get from that tour to support the work that the great folks do over at Sycamore. So I decided I'm going to start doing this. I'm a hermit. I'm a recluse. I teach. I live alone. It's like, you know, I also just need some human contact who's older than 22 years old, right? You know, I love the kids, and it's fun talking to them, but, you know, I need a little other kind of stimulation. So over the past 4 years, I probably took like 150 different people to the woods with me and took them around and led them around, showing them what's happening here. I enjoy it. I'm not a naturalist. I'm not very good at it because people inevitably want to know what's this and what's that, and that's not my thing. I'm a photographer. I'm looking for light and form and color. I'm not looking to identify things, although I try some. So I decided, I was getting a little tired of this, but what had happened in between was when I first started this, I started in May of 2013. In January of 2014, Linda O'Black, who some of you may know, she was a sponsoring editor at IU Press at the time, sent me an email and she said, Steve, I've been doing a series of guidebooks for IU Press. They've got one on the Karst area of southern Indiana, one on the, the Knobstone Trail. She said, if you're going to be doing this anyway, why don't we make a book out of it? She said, why don't you think about it and get back with me? Well, I didn't have to think about it. The first book that I wrote, I actually had talked to John Gallman originally about doing a photo book, which at first I thought they were going to do. Then they changed their mind, but I wrote Linda back and I said, Linda, I don't have to think about this. I've been working on this for 40 years. Let's do it. So that's when the project for the Guide to Natural Areas of Southern Indiana began in January 2014. So the next 2 years I spent, I primarily focused there, was on capturing and visiting all these areas. And of the 119, I probably made it to about 110. Okay, there were a few that I didn't get to, but I got to almost every one of them and traveled around as what we call this epic journey here. I'm not able to keep time up here, but let me talk about the travels that I've been through here because people always ask me, what are your favorite places? So I wrote down a quick list here of places just to mention to you out of all of these that stick in my mind for one way or another. One of them is Ferdinand State Forest. Anybody ever heard of Ferdinand? It's down in DuBois County. Well, it's a beautiful place, and it's got a great fire tower, but what I remember about that the most is that it's not Ferdinand. We ran into some locals, actually a college girl from Ferdinand with her roommate from Chicago, and we met them on the fire tower, and she let me know that it's Ferdinand. It's not Ferdinand. Pennyworth Cliffs is a nature conservancy property down on the Ohio River, just a little bit east and south of Madison. It's a beautiful place. I think that one sticks in my mind the most because it was one of the most beautiful days I spent in the woods. It was in the fall. It was October. The colors were brilliant. It was a very amazing place. Wesley Chapel Gulf. I suspect most of you are familiar with the Lost River. The Lost River system down in Orange County, mostly in Orange County, a little bit other areas as well, is an underground down in the limestone area down there is an underground series of caves and tunnels and streams that has legitimately been called a subterranean Grand Canyon. It is that big and that massive. The water, the creek comes running along at the edge of a farm field. It disappears, goes underground, and doesn't appear again for another 26 miles. Wesley Chapel Gulf is an area owned in the Hoosier National Forest. The biggest area in the karst area where the top has collapsed and you can actually see what's down below there. First of all, it's a magnificent, amazing place, and I also remember it because I got there and I looked down and here and I said, I want to be down there. It's got these mud sides with a little ledge and then it goes down further. Well, I went down to the first ledge and like, oh shit. This is solid mud. I don't know if I'm going to be able to get out of here. With my tripod and digging my feet in, I was able to climb up out of the top, and I was able to get out, and then just a couple of minutes later, a couple of guys came down the path to where I was, so I wouldn't have been stuck there anyway. But between getting stuck, and it's just such a beautiful, the color of the water there is unmatched. It's this aquamarine color that's just amazing, and it's true geology and work there. Jackson Washington State Forest, there's two sections of it on the north section over by Brownstown. There are some beautiful vistas, really tall, steep hillsides over there, and this is owned by the state. It's a state forest. So some of that had been cut down, so you've got these amazing vistas, and while you can't see the Ohio River per se, you can see the Clifty Falls power plant and the pollution that coal-burning power plant spews out of the top there from Brownstown, Indiana. That's the kind of view that you have there. Just for the record, on an aside, I've spent a lot of time writing about toxic chemicals. Some of the highest rates of mercury ever recorded in rain was recorded at Clifty Falls in the city of Madison. I don't think it's coincidental. I spent 4 years. Another reason I stopped writing was because I spent 4 years writing about the epidemic of developmental disabilities disabilities and its connection to toxic chemicals, and I don't think it's any coincidence at all that in that along the Ohio River Valley, where you have all of these concentrations of terrible pollutants, you've got coal-fired power plants, you've got heavy metals, and you've got plastics, 20% of the children in that valley right there receive special education. 22% of the children in the Evansville school system receive special education. So while it's a dubious distinction to say you can see the Clifty Falls power plant from Jackson, Washington, nonetheless, the views there are absolutely stunning. Then, of course, there's Goose Pond, which I'm sure many of you are aware of. Goose Pond Fish and Wildlife over in Greene County, just south of Linton there. The largest wetland restoration in the United States. And Lake Monroe used to be the premier bird watching site in the state of Indiana. Jill Vance down at the lake tells me, I'm sure Goose Pond has surpassed us by now. But this is an amazing place over there. The Big Oaks National Wildlife Refuge. Anybody heard of Big Oaks National Wildlife Refuge? 50,000 acres. It's the largest wildlife refuge in the state of Indiana, the largest contiguous one. The Hoosier National Forest has a lot more acreage, but you have 50,000 acres there, but it's all fenced in because that used to be with the Jefferson Proving Ground, which post-World War II, I'm not exactly sure I remember when it started. It closed in the 1990s. It was a bombing range. Before you can go into the Big Oaks, you have to watch a video and sign a sheet of paper checking off every detail that you know, because as you're walking through there, there's live ordnance. There are bombs in there that could conceivably blow up, so you have to let them know that you understand the risk before they will even let you go into the place. It's been recently in the news. You might have heard of our black bears. We've had two black bears come into Indiana, one in northern Indiana. Of course, they shot it up there. Couldn't have a bear in Indiana. Well, another one swam across the Ohio from Kentucky, has taken up residence in southern Indiana. And the last I heard, he was wintering just outside the Big Oaks National Wildlife Refuge, which is in my book. Hemlock Bluffs down in Lawrence County. Amazing, beautiful place. I forgot to talk about the trees a few minutes ago. There was a part I wanted to mention there. The millions and massive of trees that we have in Indiana, some are old growth, like I've already touched on, but we have some very rare trees. The Hemlock Bluffs have eastern red cedar trees, which don't grow any place south of here. They're at the far extreme southern end of their territory because they can't survive any place else. There's only a couple places. Trevlack Bluffs, another sycamore site just over in Brown County, is very reminiscent of Hemlock Bluffs down in Lawrence County that overlooks the Guthrie Creek down there. Beautiful, unbelievable scenery and amazing trees there. Down in Evansville in the swamp areas, bald cypress, swamp trees. I mean, I actually have in my book, because I've read in my research, people have said, don't worry, there aren't alligators in there. We have swamps in southwest Indiana. The bald cypress trees don't grow anywhere north. Sycamore has a site literally just outside of the city limits on the south end. Right across the street is Kentucky. But in there, they have some of the largest bald cypress trees. You'll see those in the slideshow that I'm going to show you here in a couple of seconds. But my favorites, I have to say that my favorites are, number one, the Bluffs of the Beaver Bend Nature Preserve. It's a DNR Nature Preserve's property about a mile south of Shoals on a bend in the White River, and along the edge there, it only goes in about a quarter mile, there's like a sheer 200-foot sandstone cliffs. I love sandstone. I'm in love with sandstone. It's the most beautiful, amazing photographic subject that you ever come across. I love the Bluffs of the Beaver Bend down there. The bend is known for mussels because when the white man first got there, they reported up on top of the bluffs piles of mussel shells 6 feet high, where the Indians had gathered all these mussel shells, shelled them, and just left these piles behind that were taller than the men who were looking at them. I love that one. Twin Swamps is an area down by Hovey Lake, down in Posey County, southwest of Evansville. And the reason I love this one so much was because I was there in January, okay? So there were no bugs, no mosquitoes. The swamps were frozen. For the most part, I was walking on ice or walking on trails. But there are two little nature preserves back in there that are just stunning and beautiful. The cypress trees down there have what are called knees. I still think it was probably the best photographs. My favorite photograph of all the 4,000 that are on my page that I've taken so far were of the bald cypress knees down there. It was a beautiful sunny day, and like I said, it was cool and no bugs. And then, of course, the Hoosier National Forest and the Charles Dean Wilderness area in particular. The Dean is where I really kind of cut my activist teeth. Before I got into journalism, I volunteered for the Sierra Club in Bloomington. It was called the Uplands Group then. And their first fight was to save the Charles Dean Wilderness area, and I was a part of that fight. And the Hoosier and the Dean are my favorite places in Indiana, I think. Of course, travel is more than just seeing the places and walking and hiking and taking pictures and things. There's also personal experiences that you have. So I want to share three of my favorite there, and then I think we'll get on to the slideshow here. One of them was what I call my near-death experience. On the day that IU Press was going to this, by the time IU Press said, okay, we're going to go with this book, I had over half of it written. On the day that they were having that meeting, I said to myself, now I know Linda, she's not going to come running back out of that meeting and call me and tell me thumbs up, thumbs down, right? I just didn't think she would do that. And I said, I'm not going to be here sitting around waiting to hear whether they said yes or no and whether I've written 40,000 words for nothing or not. So I went down, and first I went to Wesley Chapel, and as I told you, I kind of slipped down there and nearly escaped that one. So then I went over to a place called the Lick Creek, which is way south of Paoli. And at Lick Creek, what is most unique about Lick Creek is there used to be, in the early 19th century, there was an African-American settlement on the Lick Creek there. Slaves had escaped from the South. They traveled with Quakers to the North. And actually, there were African-American settlements all over the state of Indiana. Probably didn't learn that in your history, but all over the state of Indiana. But one of the best ones was this one down on the Lick Creek, down in the Hoosier National Forest. So it's about a five-mile hike in there. I was feeling pretty cocky and, you know, had a lot going on in my head, so I put my map in my pocket, and you walk in about 3 miles, and then on the inside there's a big loop, and then out at the end of that loop there's a trail that goes out, and there's an old 19th century cemetery there called the Robertson Thomas Cemetery, with all these old African-American grave sites, many of them still marked, most of them not. So I hiked all the way out there, and this was in August. So I'm sweating my ass off, and I get all the way out there, and the place isn't marked. I kind of had to find it, and then there is a trail, a sign. If you keep going, there's a sign. So I went down there, and I found the place. Then I came back out, and I thought, okay, I came in. I made two rights. I'll go back out. I take two lefts. I start walking, and I'm walking, and I'm walking, and I'm walking. And I walked through a creek that I thought was just before the trail where the parking lot where the car was. So I take a drink of my last swig of water, and I keep walking and walking and walking, and all of a sudden I come upon this little wildlife pond that's just right down the trail from the cemetery. I had actually made the whole inner loop and missed the turn, so I was still 5 miles away from my car. I didn't have any water left. As I walked, the first thing I noticed was I stopped sweating. The second thing I noticed was I started spitting cotton. And the third thing I noticed was my lips started shriveling up. And I'm out of bug spray. I said to myself, I'm a wilderness guide. My telephone was almost dead, so I pull out my cell phone. I'm able to reach my daughter up here. I tell her where I'm at. I say, I'm lost. I don't know what's going to happen here, but, you know, you need to know where I'm at. So I eventually found my way out to the other side of the place, and I walked about a mile. Once I came out of the woods, I was just in the beating sun. I shouldn't admit this, but I stopped at a house. Nobody answered. They had a little watering can on the back porch. I was getting a little, not delirious, but I just took that and took a drink of it. It wasn't water. I don't know what it was, but it wasn't water. So I eventually got down. There was another house, and I got to talking to these people. This woman told me, oh, I'd never go in there. She told me that there were bears in there. She knew that there were bears in the Hoosier National Forest down there. So anyway, so she drove me back to my car. She drove me back to my car. I got back to the place, called my daughter, and everything worked out fine. There's a little place down in Perry County called Laconia, which is literally just a crossroad. There's a place down there called Mosquito Creek. My granddaughter was with me. We pull up to this little old store, felt like we were in Mayberry, right? Two old guys sitting out on the porch in rocking chairs. We go in, get confirmation of where we're going. We go down the road. We spend our time there at Mosquito Creek. When we drive back by, the two old guys, of course, are still sitting out there. My granddaughter's like, what's going on? Why are those people still sitting on the porch? She'd never been exposed to that in her life. So the last story here that I'm going to share with you also involves Raina. We were hiking along the mouth of the Blue River, which is in the O'Bannon Woods State Park down on the Ohio River down there. Beautiful is where the Blue River meets the Ohio River, where Indiana's most beautiful river meets its mightiest river down there. And as we're walking along, we see a cell phone on the trail. We pass some horse riders, then we find a cell phone, so we pick it up, and we figure it was probably theirs. A little while later, the telephone rings. They answer it, and of course, it was the people. He said, well, yes, we found your phone. We'll drop it off at the park gate, right? So we parked it off. We dropped it off there. Went about the rest of our day. There's a beautiful place. If you haven't been there, it's not recommended for the food, but it's probably the best view in Indiana to eat. In Leavenworth, it's called the Overlook, I believe. beautiful, gorgeous place. So we're sitting there having dinner, Raina and I are, and this guy comes over to us and he says, "Didn't you find my cell phone on the trail today?" I said, "We sure did." So he thanked me for it and everything. So, you know, they went back, we chatted for a few minutes, he went back to his seat. Then when the server came by, I said, "Well, we'd like to get our check." And she says, "Well, here's what we're going to do with your check. That gentleman over there is going to pay for your meal because you found his cell phone for him." So we ended up getting a free meal out of that particular trip. So that's kind of where we're at here today in 2016. I'll just bring you up to real quick here. On Labor Day, we had an IU Press authors gathering in Dunn Meadow. I wasn't sure what was happening. I knew my book was doing well. Well, they finally had a new acquisitions editor who came up to me and said, "Let's talk about books. A Northern Indiana book is a no-brainer." So I signed a contract with them to do a Northern Indiana companion to the Southern Indiana book, which I will be starting on full time the day after tomorrow when class is in tomorrow. And I also signed a contract with them to do another book, a coffee table book, which is what I've wanted to do since my first book in the mid-1990s, on the Hoosier National Forest called The Hoosier National Forest, Rewilding Southern Indiana, in which through photographs and text I'm going to tell the story of how the Hoosier National Forest began as this Amazon jungle, total wooded area, was completely devastated by the early 20th century and has now come back to where it is wild Indiana once again. And that kind of brings me up to speed on where we're at here. Just one more thing I want to mention before I go. As I said, Gary Morrison and I have started a thing called IndianaNaturePhotography.com. You can go there and see our stuff. We have cards and flyers on our May 13th wildlife photography tour that I would invite you all to take them and hopefully come and join us. So with that, I think I'll just we'll see if we can get our technology to work here. It's been touch and go, but I've got an 8-minute slide called Intimate Sycamore Landscapes that I hope you all enjoy.
The 750-acre plus Bean Blossom Bottoms Nature Preserve, a complex of protected wetlands on the Bean Blossom Creek northwest of Bloomington, features a diverse combination of lowland ecosystems, from wet, bottomland hardwood forests to shrub wetlands, sedge meadows, and successional fields. In addition to the soggy wetlands, this natural area is home to nesting bald eagles. In early summer, the bottoms provide habitat for turtles and other amphibians, as well as wetland wildflowers such as swamp rose, prairie rose, and evening primrose. Bean Blossom Bottoms is also a popular hiking spot. This rare lenticular cloud formation fascinated this group of hikers from the Sierra Club. Historically, lenticular clouds have been associated with alien spacecraft. Several viewing platforms are placed strategically around the preserve. In winter, Bean Blossom Bottoms transforms into a frigid, near-lifeless landscape. The creek freezes over. Dried sedges blow in the biting wind. The raised boardwalk is footprint-free. The Cedars Preserve is an isolated, remote forest at the end of a dead-end road south and west of Bloomington. Its 44 acres feature a 20-acre stand of mature eastern red cedar trees, along with a seasonal creek and karst features. A well-marked loop trail system follows the creek and ascends a hill around and through the cedar grove. In early spring, wildflowers such as trillium, wood poppy, and wild geranium blanket the forested floor. Occupying 13 acres on Bloomington's far west side, Wayne Woods is one of Indiana's smallest nature preserves. It packs into a small space a variety of natural features, including mature hardwood trees that thrive in its moist conditions, a spectacular display of spring wildflowers, including zigzag spiderworts, and several sinkholes typical of the karst area the woods lie in. Steep and forested, the 15 acres known as Lake Lemon Woods occupy a 100-foot hillside northeast of Bloomington on the developed north shore of Lake Lemon. A multi-loop trail offers a range of hiking routes from a short, relatively level walk paralleling the road to a strenuous ascent to the ridgetop. The mature forest produces an open, airy feel even in summer when brightly colored fungi dot the trail. The 66-acre Scarlet Oak Woods features mostly mature, ridge-lined forest in eastern Monroe County, with a deep valley and intermittent stream. It is named for its scarlet oak trees, with their bristle-shaped leaves that turn brilliant red in the fall. Bordering a unit of Morgan Monroe State Forest, this preserve features a 130-foot drop from ridge to geode-strewn creek, which, in deep winter, is characterized by ice formations on the frozen stream. Located in western Monroe County, The 190-acre Porter West Preserve contains a combination of mature and young forest, early successional areas, small ponds, sandstone outcrops, and karst features that include sinkholes and a spring. A trail from the parking lot splits, with one branch going north to the woods and the other continuing west through an open area to the ponds. In summer, the Porter West Field brims with common daylily, birdsfoot trefoil, Deptford pink, fleabane, Japanese honeysuckle, crown vetch, and a variety of winged creatures. The Powell Preserve features a 100-foot relief with a diverse mix of ecosystems, from forested hills, bottomland woods, and wet meadow, to a prairie area with dazzling wildflowers such as wild bergamot and purple coneflower. Its 67 acres in northwest Monroe County border Bean Blossom Creek and support swallowtail butterflies and other wildlife. Located just west of Columbus, the 32-acre Tangeman Woods features an outdoor lab nature trail, which was created in the 1970s as an outdoor education lab by the Bartholomew County Soil and Water Conservation District. The trail passes through a mixed hardwood forest with several bridges crossing intermittent creek ravines. 2 miles of Mode Pass traverse the 98-acre Touch the Earth Natural Area west of Columbus, which is known for hiking and birdwatching. The preserve supports a wide range of wildflowers, including butterfly weed, Queen Anne's lace, rose pink, and a variety of grasses. On its 233 acres, the Trevlach Bluffs Nature Preserve in northwest Brown County features a towering 200-foot bluff above Bean Blossom Creek. In summer, the lush trail on the northern upland supports pearl crescent butterflies, wild phlox, and massive fungal blooms. Trevlach Bluffs' rare native hemlocks and the Bean Blossom Creek provide the only color in winter. Situated on the edge of Monroe Lake in southwest Brown County, the 62-acre Austin and Mary Ann Gardner Memorial Woods features a rugged, forested landscape with a terraced slope face that overlooks a deep valley. Its steep slopes and mature woods border the Hoosier National Forest to the north and east. Nearly a square mile in size just east of Brown County State Park, the 600-acre Laura Hare Nature Preserve at Downey Hill offers moderate to rugged hiking through precipitous, V-shaped hills and valleys that drop 100 to 200 feet. In late summer, fungi and hints of the autumn ahead provide color to the forest floor. The Jeremy Keith Oakley Preserve's 15 acres protect a forested creek ravine with an open field northeast of Bedford. It's a living memorial to, quote, provide a place for people, especially children, to understand the fragility and value of nature as a haven to all spirits to enrich the human soul. Situated just east of Bloomington, the 26-acre Pizzo Preserve protects steep, 200-foot forested slopes that rise above the North Fork of the Salt Creek, just above the North Fork waterfowl resting area. A trail ascends a hill and branches to a field owned by the Department of Natural Resources and the preserve's west border. Adjoining the Patoka River National Wildlife Refuge just east of Oakland City, the 1,043-acre Columbia Mine Preserve is part of a contiguous block of 5,000 protected acres south of the Patoka River. The preserve is jointly managed by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and is located just east of the Patoka's Snaky Point Marsh and Hugh Boyd and Maxie Marsh Trail areas. The Eagle Slough Natural Area, just north of the Ohio River in Evansville, protects 127 acres of bottomland forest and lakes. Its wetland and mature bottomland forest feature some of the largest bald cypress trees in Indiana. State threatened, bald cypress is a southern species and is rare this far north.
You have been listening to Steve Higgs, one of Indiana's foremost environmental photographers and writers, discuss his experience studying and reporting on natural conservation in Indiana. His talk was one in a long series from Green Drinks Bloomington, a monthly event for people interested in discussing, debating, and exploring their way to a greener world.
Been listening to Standing Room Only. Join us each week for on-location recordings of lectures, town hall meetings, and other public forums. If there's a particular event you'd like to hear broadcast on this program, email that information to us directly at news@wfhb.org. The Standing Room Only archive is available online at wfhb.org/news. Standing Room Only is a production of our volunteer-powered News and Public Affairs Department here on Community Radio, WFHB.